Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. 3 hours to spend together, and the first hour will definitely be a delight. We're going to talk to Steve Probst again, and yet he's the guy I always say when Steve is on, he's the one to ask, because I know something about obscure soul and R&B and Southern California records and more, but not a lot. The guy who wrote the book, literally in this case, and book is plurals, many, is Steve Probst, and we always have links on Raleigh.net, but I know we're trying to stand the other night, who I think will be calling in, plenty to talk about, and we'll also pick up from what we were doing last month, but it's been about 3 months. So Steve, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, nice to be here. Thank you, Raleigh.
It's always fun. So, you know, I wasn't going to talk about this until Stan called Monday and asked me, he said, are the Majestics from Detroit the same Majestics who are from Florida? And I said, no, because the Miami Majestics, that was an early incarnation of Sam Moore before there was Dave Prater. And,
right.
But I you know, want to check my own self, so I go actually to discos, why not? And the first thing I find is they've got over 25 groups called the Majestics, all spelled the same way. And I thought to myself, is this the most used band name ever when it comes to soul and R&B? How many can you recount?
Well, there was a group with a hit called the Falcons, and I think every city had a band or a group called the Falcons. That's,
okay.
You know, I mean, the You're So Fine group, but
sure.
There was the Falcons on Savoy well before the You're So Fine group, and I think there were quite a few groups with that name. I don't know, you know, bird groups,
yeah.
You have a limited number of choices. There was only one group called the Crows, for instance. There was only one group called the Ravens, because they each had national hits.
Right.
But before you have your national hits, there's going to be bands and groups with picking up a name they think is unique. And it'll probably be unique in their market, but not in every market. So
that's your take on it. Well, you know, it's interesting because the Majestics, you know, you say there's one in every market. No, in some cases there are three and four in every market. And I
very I, good. Yeah, you're right. But there's only one Penguins. Who
right,
else would?
Right. Exactly. But I was curious about this, and so of course I was real curious about the Majestics, who had been on Linda, you know, one of Eddie Davis's label. And I come to find out that, like I say, in East LA alone there were actually three of them, and Chick Carlton was in two of them, and of course Barry White was in one of them. Some of them,
yeah.
One group had been the Atlantics, and another.
Yeah, there were two Atlantics groups.
Right.
A Hispanic group and a black group that involved Barry White. And Gaynell Hodge.
Right.
And but Eddie Davis would mix and match them. He'd put out those songs under different group names. So it's a little on the confusing side. But he liked the Atlantics, I think, because Atlantic Boulevard was a throughway through East LA.
Cruising, you know. Major cruising, the corner of Atlantic and Whittier, Saturday nights. Be there, be
well,
square.
Better.
Yeah. Yeah, done that many a Saturday night, so that's...
And it's still happening.
Is it really?
Watch what happened after the Dodgers won the World Series. And you'll see a lot of activity at Atlantic and Whittier.
Oh, man.
Now they're doing donuts and spin-outs and that sort of thing. But back then it was cruising. Well, it's still cruising. It's developed into a multi-purpose intersection.
Well, yeah, Atlantic and Whittier on Saturday nights, and then, of course, Van Nuys Boulevard on Wednesday nights. Is that still going on?
You know, I really haven't kept track of it. Near where I live, Bellflower Boulevard and, Bellflower Boulevard and Bellflower still has a scene.
Do they?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a narrow four-lane street, so you get a lot of, you know, you get up close to the people that are checking you out. Yeah, The sheriff's department sort of tried to put the kibosh.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to talk more about East LA groups because, you know, you mentioned the Atlantics and stuff like that. But I understand from our buddy who always reminds me what your phone number is and when you're on the air, and I greatly appreciate that. And
Dave,
yeah, that's right, Edgar. You betcha. And that's a lot of fun. And he said, well, last time when you got off the air, you're about to talk about war. So I thought,
okay, here we go. Yeah. I interviewed Lonnie Jordan. He's the one remaining original member of the band War that still is entitled to use the band name. There was a big legal brouhaha, and now the bulk of the other guys, well, several of the guys are no longer with us, but the remaining members have to use the moniker of the Lowrider Band. They can't use the name War. But Lonnie Jordan was telling me a whole bunch about how they got started. But here's an interesting story about, you know, the song Spill the Wine. Obviously.
Oh, well, yeah, obviously. That's probably the signature song. But, you know, I know they're originally from Long Beach, and I want to go back all the way to the creators. But go ahead.
Yeah, okay, we can do that. Before we do that, let me tell you about Spill the Wine.
Okay.
That was their first release under their name. It was a duet. Eric Burden of the Animals sang lead on that. And I think he was just improvising a thing about a gnome or a, you know, a guy in the field. And, you know, I don't remember the original lyrics, but it had nothing to do with Spill the Wine.
Right.
But what happened was, during the recording session, he brought in a girlfriend by the name of Carmen. Now, as Lonnie Jordan told me, I never saw her face. That was the problem that night.
Oh, no, oh, no, oh, no.
Eric was in the singing booth against the wall. She had beautiful hair. I never saw her body. I just saw her head. Oh. Here I am behind the board in the control room. Okay. I was smoking weed, watching the back of Carmen, watching Eric sing. I was hypnotized, dazed, and confused. Started pouring this wine into a styrofoam cup. All of a sudden, I saw it spill on the board, started smoking. Everybody jumped up. Eric thought it was a joke, started singing, Spill the Wine. So that's why halfway through the song, which had nothing to do with wine prior to when that happened, it became Spill the Wine because that's what Lonnie Jordan did, and it cost him $25,000 to pay for the board that he wrecked by spilling the wine in it.
Well,
cha-cha-cha.
I love that, sir. Hopefully the record made up for that 25 grand, but that explains it because I remember the opening. I was once out strolling one very hot summer day when I thought I'd lay myself down to rest in a big field of tall grass. I laid
That's
there
right.
in the sun and felt it caressing my face, and as I fell asleep, I dreamed I was in a Hollywood movie, and I was the star of that movie. This really blew my mind. Yeah, I know all of it. And,
there's no mention of wine or spilling anything in the first half of the song.
No, exactly right. There I was, taken to a place, the Hall of the Mountain King, stood up high on the mountaintop, naked to the world in front of every kind of girl.
Right.
Yeah.
But Spill the Wine kicked in when Lonnie Jordan spilled the wine.
Right. That's so funny because, of course, in the song, it's after the crazy girls, the tall ones, the short ones, the brown ones, all that. And when one whispered in my ear something crazy, she said, spill the wine.
Right. And she probably, and then you heard her in the background.
Yeah.
You hear her voice.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. That's your inside story. That's your inside scoop for the night. 1969, I think.
Too bad there wasn't a music video.
Yeah, well, I think Lonnie Jordan took the video in his mind and was able to recount it. At least help me visualize it. You know, I can see Carmen and Eric in their respective poses as Eric is singing at the microphone. Yeah, he was having a good time.
That's hilarious.
So that's the story of War's first record, Spill the Wine.
That was at Wally Hyder, I think. That board
Studio
would
A.
have been okay. All right.
In fact, it was right next door. This Lonnie told me more. Right next door to Shelly Man's Jazz Club.
Okay.
While Eric was trying to create the lyrics, you could hear Hampton Hawes and Milk Jackson next door through the wall. I was trying to hear next door and hear them next door and do the track. So it was a jazz combo recording next door at Wally Heyer's studio. Oh man, yeah, that's the add-on to the story.
Well, that's great, and you know that's the kind of thing that came together and would make it a hit. It's not the kind of thing that could ever be recreated. Hopefully they didn't sing it differently on 12 tracks that are on CDs we don't want to hear, because it sounds like what we got on that 45 was the best take there.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. I think it was a one-take record, in fact.
Yeah, and I can see why. Yeah,
yeah.
Right. And 70s, you know, they were really, really big. But,
oh, yeah.
And I guess it was, and you would know more than I would, Jerry Goldstein, who got the Animal Guy, Eric Burdon, together with the creators originally. So that was sort
it was
of...
At it was at a club in North Hollywood.
Okay.
The creators had recorded for our friend Magnificent Montague, you
mm-hmm.
know, a real taskmaster when it came to dealing with groups. So, you know, they were, you know, they had to, it was Montague's way or the highway. And there were a couple of singles put out under the name The Creators. He also recorded them as the Packers, which I don't think they were on Hole in the Wall.
No.
That was, Axton from...
Right, from Memphis.
Yeah, from Memphis.
Right.
And where was I? I lost my train of thought. Oh, Jim Stewart.
Right.
And that was basically, I think, the... what's your understanding? Booker T and the MGs, and I think Leon Haywood was part of it. And, you know, he was a very talented organ player and musician.
I think that Charles Axton was in the Marquees, and that was also same area, and that's how it originally got formed. But, yeah, Booker T was in it, and Steve Cropper and Al Jackson Jr., so, yeah, it was your usual Stax, guys, period.
Well, yeah, but when you listen to the instrumental, it's basically the in crowd.
Yeah, well.
Oh, somebody ripped off a song. That never happened before.
That's never happened. No, of course.
But then he issued one thing called Pink Chiffon under the name The Packers, and that was the creators. But their potentially big record never happened because it was called Burn, and it came out just at the same time as the Watts riots, and that's when Magnificent Montague had to quit shouting "Burn, baby, burn," and people would call up and
which, of course, as you well know, I'm glad you brought this up, he was doing for years before there were Watts riots. The original meaning of that had nothing to do with burning down Watts.
Right. It was. You tell me your.
Well, like the burner, you know. I mean, it's cook. It's all that.
Yeah, excitement, stir things up.
Right. And Pink Chiffon wound up on HBR.
Right.
Which is also weird. You wonder how, and for people who don't know, that's Hanna-Barbera. You wonder how that got together.
Well, yeah, HBR put out some garage and psych records, too. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they were all-purpose. They put out Louis Prima. All sorts of stuff came out on HBR. Scatman Crothers was on HBR. So it was
the Five Americans.
Five Americans, sure.
Dartels, yeah, absolutely. And of course, then all of whatever, like the Flintstone or whatever cartoon characters they had, they were on it too.
Yeah, and what's his name from Three Dog Night?
Hutton? Yeah.
I can't think of his
was
name.
Was it Danny Hutton?
Danny Hutton.
The Roses and Rainbows? Yeah.
Yeah. So, HBR was, and I think, that group, the band from Texas, getting old, you know, you're gonna miss me.
13th floor elevators. Yeah, okay.
On BR, I think they picked up the. It was a master's pickup. I think it was on International Artists before it was on HBR. But you know, that was a. That was a pretty interesting label. I know people that collect that label. You know, I know people that collect
of course.
The Colpix label, no matter what's on it. I know people that collect only the HBR label. That's my, you know...
Well, as I often say, I collect all of the Shamal records. They're Shamal number one. There's nothing else. And those
what,
were...
What label?
Shamal, you know, that's the Holy Grail. If you know anything about it, I want to know. But they had one song on Shamal Records, and it was a version of Blue Moon. And it was...
Spell it, please.
C-H-A-M-A-L. And if you can find them, and again, that would be the one version of Blue Moon, and it was just unbelievably good. I play it often. And and I can't find anything about this label. I've looked everywhere in the world. I finally decided in what's left of my mind that it probably, if anything, is like a contraction, like Shaw and Mahl or something like that, you know, like happened so on. But the group was the Vitones, and I hesitate to mention that because, of course, there's plenty of Vitones out there, not this Vitones.
There's the Vitones. Yeah.
Right, of course.
With the Billy Harrigan Quartet. How's that?
Yeah, well, the Billy Harrigan Quartet. Okay, so I tried that too. And, you know, there was somebody who was singing named Billy Harrigan, but it must have been a grandson if it was related. But I can't find anything, nor can I find who the female lead is on. And the Vitones on Blue Moon is a female lead. I can't find out who she is. And this is, this is the thing that has been bothering me for decades. But every time some of these, like Sound Exchange, will say, and we pay the labels, I'm like, well, if you can find Shamal, good luck, because I play it and, you know, dutifully report it. But I'm, you know, nobody knows what this is. But I'm surprised you haven't heard this gem. So I'm gonna play it next. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. Absolutely. On Shamal, it'll be the Vitones, whoever's singing lead. Maybe if you know, if anybody knows, or if you've got questions or thoughts or comments for Steve, this is the one-stop place. And what usually happens is the end of the hour comes and people are lined up. And I'm like, sorry, Steve takes an hour, not an hour and 10 minutes. So I would suggest you get in there soon, like during the news, maybe. 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh on WGN Radio.
Someone whispered, please adore me. And when I looked, the moon had turned to gold. Blue moon. Now I'm no longer alone. Without the dream in my heart.
WGN. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Just sublime as far as I'm concerned. Yes, the Vitones on Shamal. Yeah, we have absolutely no idea about this. We're talking to Steve Propes, who does know all, so I'm very surprised you don't know this, but not totally, because I called Val Shively, of course, first place I usually turn, and all Val said was, I paid $1,000 for that single, Raleigh.
Wow. Copies out there, yours and his.
Right, exactly. And I said, $1,000? I said, so then you must know all about it. He said, I have no idea. Let me know what you find out. That was years ago. I found out nothing. So.
Well, I can only tell you one thing, that it was pressed by Royal Plastics, which was an arm of Sid Nathan King's custom pressing operation. So he pressed a lot of Midwestern and labels from Kentucky, Ohio, that whole, area. So yeah. I got to figure.
How do you know that?
I looked it up on Discogs.
Oh, okay. All right. No, that's fine. Because it makes sense. And they've been around for forever.
Yeah.
But
doing custom, just like Starday was doing a lot of custom pressing. King was in that. That's how he made his money, I think.
One of the ways, labels. Yeah.
Yeah, he'd press up a couple hundred records for a small label, and they'd just send out test copies, and they usually flopped, and you never heard from them again. That's why certain records like this one are so rare. It's a great record, but man. Okay.
Yeah. Now, Stan is going to join us from Dearborn, and next to you, Stan knows more surprising information about more stuff than you can imagine. So we'll find out as he. I'm sure he has a lot of questions for you, but we'll find out. So, Stan, what do you know about it?
Hi, Raleigh, and hi, Steve. I don't know as much as you guys. That's why I'm calling in, ask you questions. But
that's a great record,
what
isn't
I
it?
I heard.
Yeah.
Yeah, that record, I heard it on Chair Radio, CHYR, out of Leamington, Ontario, a lot. So that's why I was thinking it was Canadian. And I have a friend of mine that from Canada, collector, looking into that. But apparently he hasn't found anything because he never got back to me on it.
Right, okay. All right, so the plot thickens. So, yes, well, Steve is your one-stop shop for answers, so ask away, Stan.
Okay, Steve. I remember seeing a couple of newsletters that you had out in the 80s. A friend of mine gave me a couple of them. I looked at them. And,
okay. I hope the corrections were included. Okay. Anyway, go ahead, Stan. What do I?
Okay. I've got one of my favorite or one of my newer top 10 records of called "Little Did I Dream" by the Twilighters on MGM.
Right.
And it came out in 1955, and I was wondering if it's any relation to the Buddy Milton and the Twilighters on RPM.
Yeah, there's another group that every town had one or two.
Yeah, there's both. 18.
Yeah, I knew we were going to get into that.
Right, right. At least 18. Even one of Tony Allen's backup groups was the Twilighters.
That's right.
Charles
Wright
did Eternally. That. He didn't do it originally as the Twilighters. There's another story there. I think it was Huggy Boy that named him the Twilighters. He picked up a master release. But I seriously doubt that the MGM Twilighters had anything to do with the Buddy Milton. But when you play it, sometimes you can hear a voice that sounds familiar. Could you discern any connection between the two? I'm not saying it can't be, but I doubt it.
The MGM Twilighters, by the way, were from the Bronx.
Oh, okay. Well,
they had been the Starlings.
Yeah. Oh, on Josie?
Yeah. So
Starlings, okay. Yeah.
Okay, now I learned something. They also did a song called, Half Angel? Or they had
Half
they
Angel, had two, right?
Right, right. Huh? My Plea for Love. And yeah, they had a few things.
Yeah,
and then there was the Twilighters on Specialty, which I could ask it. It's True, I think it's called, on Specialty.
Yeah, I know that. But the one Twilighters I know something about was Charles Wright. He based the song Eternally on Together by Richard Berry. After Richard Berry left the Flares, he recorded a great ballad called Together. And Charles Wright, who was quite a bit young, well, not quite a bit, but somewhat younger than Richard, was a fan of both Richards and Jesse Belvin. And he based the song Eternally on Together. And it was released originally as Little Charlie, C-H-O-L-L-Y, Wright, because Charlie, C-H-O-L-L-Y, Williams owned the label, and on the Charlie label. So Huggy Boy picked up the master to put it on his Caddy label, named
right.
Caddy, because he was told by the distributor he could buy a Cadillac if
it was a hit. Yeah, that's right, Caddy. And then didn't Dot pick it up for distribution?
No,
I think I'm pretty
Dot
sure.
Dot picked it up from Huggy.
Yeah,
that was the idea. He was sort of the intermediary, just like with Wipeout by the Safaris. John Mariscalco
right.
picked it up, put it on Prince's with the intention of selling it to Dot. And Dot said, okay, we'll buy it, but you have to cut it down. It's too long. So that was a common thing. You'd pick up a master, hoping a bigger label would hear your release on the radio. And
right.
it worked, Huggy Boy.
And I think
yeah.
somewhere on it, Eternally was on Pico also. It was a blue label, a light blue label.
You got it. You
yeah.
got it. I think that was Huggy getting the rights back and putting it on.
I'm sure, way. Yeah, I'm sure it was his.
But everybody made some money, maybe Charlie Williams. Yeah, go ahead.
I've got a record on Aladdin I'm looking at. It's Fatso Theus.
Oh, I love that song. I love that.
Yeah, Be Cool My Heart.
Yes.
I just want to know how to pronounce his name. I've heard like three different pronunciations.
Yeah, and the Flares. That's an Oscar McLawley composition.
Yeah.
Originally done. It was originally recorded by Oscar McLawley and the Honey Jumpers.
Now, I thought Leon Rene had the writer credit on that.
Well, maybe he did, but
yeah,
okay.
Well, yeah, we all just
Leon Rene on here, yeah.
Yeah, we know how that happens. Rene. Yeah, so interesting.
And
but
correct,
yeah.
It was originally recorded. Leon, you know, Oscar McCauley did a bunch of stuff for Leon Rene on the
yeah.
original Class label. In fact, in the early 50s, before the Bobby Day Class label came out. Oscar McCauley did a ton of stuff, and Convicted was his big record, but the Honey Jump
right.
and other stuff. Well, actually, Convicted was on Modern, but where was I? Be Cool My Heart was a great record. What was it, Rock and Roll Drive-In, the flip side?
Yeah, yeah. But it was Be Cool
yeah.
My Heart was wonderful. And, you know, I love the soliloquies, but it reminds me of the first thing that ever came out on Phoebe. And I don't know if you remember this, but Buddy Carl. And the flip side was Tender Words and Wicked Lies, and it's got some narration in it. Are you aware of it?
No.
Okay, well, I'm going to play some of it because this is another one of your assignments, Steve, because you're great at this. I want to know who the guy is who's doing the soliloquy, and I have tried everything to find out. And
okay, let's
absolutely,
hear it.
Yeah, I want to find it. I wasn't planning to play it, but I'm looking for it now because I know I've got it. So yeah, it's just well, you'll see what I mean. And
is Fatso Theus is the right way to pronounce that?
Yeah, was part of the Honey Jumpers. He was part of Oscar McLawley's band and went out on his own.
Okay.
Oscar McLawley was not the easiest guy in the world to get along with. And Jeanette tells some real scary stories about when she recorded Hey Boy, Hey Girl with Oscar. She didn't care for him a whole lot. I tried to reach him. I found a number in Oakland, but he never answered the phone. You'd hear it ring constantly, and then it stopped ringing. So I figured Oscar had stopped ringing himself.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, I found
so
it. I found it. Here's tender words and wicked lies, and the soliloquy is the part, or I should say the narration. You'll see.
Okay, here we go.
Tender words.
Speak to me, Daddy-O.
Tender kisses.
Ooh, cool lips.
Tender songs.
Tenderness bits.
I'm dreaming of.
Ah, diggity-da.
What you've done.
You don't know.
I'll forgive you.
This is real cool.
Just come back.
Serve it later, later.
And share my love.
Ooh-wee, this boy's gone.
It's no fun.
He ain't lived yet.
While you're away.
Better cut out, Gator.
Love for you.
Hurry, Harry. The fiddle.
Is here to stay.
This chick is gone, man.
Wedding bells.
I knew he'd be hearing bells.
I will give you.
This is the most.
You're the one.
Mabel, lock the stable.
I'll always love.
10-1, he never makes it.
That's my favorite part. 10-1, he never makes it. So who is it?
Who's the deep voice?
Yes.
Oh, I don't know. It reminds me of White Silver Sands.
Yeah, well, Buddy Carl on the A side, it's without the narration that goes with it. But the flip side, Tender Words and Wicked Lies, has this guy, and I just love it.
Oh, could it be, don't you think it's somebody from Pittsburgh?
Yeah, if it's on Phoebe, we figure. But.
Yeah, he was in the studio at the time, and they said, hey, you know, come over here. That's what they did with... who did the great googly moo on Strand of the Jungle? It was Prentice Moreland.
Right, right.
Happened to be hanging out in the studio, and they said, okay, we need you to do a bit here. Why don't you come over and help us out with Strand of the Jungle? We added the great googly moo and made millions of dollars for Modern Records.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's probably just some guy that, you know, they decided they'd do this little novelty record, and it's pretty cool. I never heard it. Never heard it before.
Oh, wow. Yeah, when I found that, which was years ago, because I knew it was the first thing that they released on Phoebe, which, like I say, is an interesting little label, I just loved it. And that's another one when I've asked over the years, and nobody knows.
Now, is this, am I picking up a trend here that whenever you hit a town, because you've been in more than a few cities, the first thing you do is go out and look for records that... sell in any other city you only find in Pittsburgh or Philly or wherever you happen to be at the time.
Well, it's usually not that intentional, but absolutely. There's almost always on some radio station that either has absolutely no ratings or some public thing or whatever. Some guy's got a show, you know, that kind of thing. And he's brought the records in from home. And most of them, you know, I could do without. But I remember that's how I originally found a Native Girl, you know, Elephant Walk. I had not heard that till Washington, Pennsylvania, many, many years ago, decades ago. I drove through and that was, what? Is that? And of course,
on Cortland.
Yes, yeah, on Cortland. Yes.
Ooh, ooh, yeah. That's what's the other song that Don Juan? My God,
right.
What a great record!
Yeah,
what a very East L.A. You know, I mean, come on. That I'm sure that there is some, you know, guy, and I'm not going to name him because maybe he doesn't need the publicity, but he's. researching L.A. gangs and their theme songs.
Oh.
I knew that would capture your imagination.
Yeah, I'll be very curious. You don't have to tell me who he is, but when you've got the list together, let's review.
Yeah, well, I'll have it for the next show. I'm sort of cribbing it from him, you know.
Oh.
He posts on Facebook. I think that's a fascinating little study in sociology or gang studies or whatever you want to call it, law enforcement studies.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. What's their themes? You know, the town I live in or in the...
McKinley. You betcha. Well, you know, it's terrible because those are all like my favorite records. And I remember one time, I got to go to El Monte Legion Stadium. Only once or so. You know, there's a lot of places like that you're saying, man, I love this music, but I think I'll listen from home.
Let me plug a friend of mine. There's a magazine out of Massachusetts called Echoes of the Past.
Yes.
And in that, and it's just come out, I did as complete a story as I could on Little Julian Herrera. So that's featured in Echoes of the Past. We can talk about Little Julian next time if you want to.
Yeah, he's been away a year and a day.
Now he's here to stay.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Huggy.
Exactly. I had no idea what that meant until then. But, of course, what it was he got it for statutory rape and they sent him to jail. So a year and a day was kind of the buzzword for the guy just came back from jail.
Well, the rape wasn't all that statutory. I had access to the LA Times coverage. There were three guys and one girl, and it was in Griffith Park. And it wasn't a, you know.
That's interesting because he only got like a year.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, choose the right lawyer and you can, you know.
Yeah.
We know about that. So anyway, that's going to be in this issue.
Oh, my God, I just realized something. I've got two commercial breaks till the end of the hour, and that's not enough minutes for them all. So we have to reschedule this again soon.
Okay, well, I'll be available, so have a good Thanksgiving.
All right, you too, and thanks, Stan. All right, so that's where we'll pick it up next hour here on WGN Radio.